Now, back to Answers for Elders as we honor our military veterans. Carriage is the proud sponsor of our veteran segment, hosted by former Seattle Seahawk, Dennis Boyd.
Hi, this is Dennis. We're here with Answers for Elders, and we're down at Patriots Landing in DuPont, Washington, and here talking to Al Jones. Al comes to us from the Air Force, and originally from British Columbia, and then from the Royal Air Force, and then eventually into the United States Air Force. Al, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Al, do you mind telling us a little bit about kind of where you started? It says that you learned or had the desire to fly at an early age.
Yeah, that's right. Well, when Charles Lindbergh crossed the Atlantic Ocean in 1927, I was about 8 years old then. I was born in 1919. And I got enthused about airplanes. And my mother encouraged me, and she bought me books, and I built model airplanes. And from then on, my goal in life was to be a pilot. So when I graduated from high school in Seattle, Queen Anne High School, in 1938, I enrolled at the University of Washington. But then I thought, really what I want to do is fly airplanes. And so I changed my direction, and I enrolled in a class to get a pilot's license at Boeing Field. And that's what got me started. I bought an interest in a Piper Cub. That's a little single-engine airplane. Started building my flying time up so that I could qualify for a job with United Airlines. United was the premier airline at that time. And I was in the midst of building up my time to be a candidate at about 150 hours when there was an outfit that came to the Seattle area called the Clayton Knight Committee. And they were looking at airports for young guys like myself, 20 years old. I was 19 then, and had some flying time to go over to England to fly for the Royal Air Force. So I listened, and I thought, gee, that sounds like a good way to do it. But then I thought, I'm kind of low on flying experience to climb into a Spitfire. So I thought, that's not the right thing to do if I want to live through the war. So he suggested that I go up to Canada and go through their training program, which I did. So I joined the Royal Canadian Air Force with the idea then I'd go over and fly Spitfires. But when I got through with the training up there, which was in 1940-41, they decided I'd be a good instructor. So they made me an advanced pilot instructor on the Harvard, which is the equivalent of the U.S. Air Force AT-6. And I flew as an instructor for about a year, which was probably the best thing that could have happened to me, because by the time I instructed for about a year, I had a pretty good idea of how to fly an airplane. And then I went over to England, and that's how I got into the combat area.
So how did you go from the Spitfire to a bomber?
Well, I never went to the Spitfire.
Oh.
I went, when I got over to England, they were building up their bomber force, which was by that time, it was 1942. Mm-hmm. And they were looking for experienced twin-engine pilots. Well, I had quite a bit of twin-engine time on an Avro Ensign, which was a trainer. And so I was selected to go on a Wellington bomber with a bomber command. And it was kind of an interesting tour. It started off with, they put a bunch of us in a big hangar, like 20 pilots, 20 navigators and 20 bombardiers, and well, the specialty of the airplane. And it was like going to a dancing prom, and you picked out your own crew. It was very democratic. And I picked out a navigator because I'd heard he was a navigation instructor, and I thought, well, he must know something about navigating. And then there was another guy there who was an American. We, all of us Americans, wore a patch on our shoulder that said USA. And I saw that patch, and I asked him to be my bombardier, which he said, okay. And then the three of us picked up our wireless operator and our gunner, tail gunner, and we flew together for 40 missions on the Wellington bomber. And they were great guys. We got along very well together. So I thought it was a pretty good way for the British to do it. If you didn't like who you picked out, it was your own fault.
So tell me, what was that like on your first mission?
Well, my very first mission, I never even got off the ground. They put you in a... Wellington didn't have a co-pilot. We flew as a single pilot. They put us in a jump seat next to the pilot where a co-pilot was set. And I flew with this Australian, and it was dark night, and we were running down the runway, and another airplane taxied onto the runway by mistake, and we hit him. So we had a crash on the first takeoff. That was my start. And I thought, well, this is a good sign. Get it over with. So the next one I flew on a second dickey ride with a British sergeant pilot. And that was really a wild mission. And he was a great pilot. He did a good job. The target was a heavily defended target. And he hung on there through all the flak and the searchlights and everything that goes with it. And I just hung on. And when we got all through, he leaned over to me, and I was sitting there just not doing anything but hoping I could get through it. And he said, "Hey, Sergio, you were pretty good on that mission. You didn't say a word." Well, I said, "I was so damn scared I couldn't talk." So anyway, we landed back at our base, and from then on I flew with my own crew, and we flew 40 missions together and managed to have one crash landing. We got shot up over a target and knocked out a fuel tank, so I ran out of fuel. But I landed at night in the forest in North Africa. We were bombing a target in Italy. And I knew I was going to run out of fuel, but I didn't want a ditch in the Mediterranean. So we made it to North Africa and landed in the forest there.
So no landing strip or whatever. You just
The old wheels up, and the airplane was a total loss, but we didn't have any problem ourselves.
Well, that says a little bit for your skills as well as the airplane and how sturdy it was.
And a lot of luck.
So you flew 40 missions for the Royal Air Force and then 48 for the U.S. Air Force.
Yes. Well, when we finished our tour of operations, we called them ops, whereas the American Air Force called them missions. And my bombardier, who was also American, that I mentioned earlier, and I both decided we'd apply for a transfer to the United States Air Force. And they were very willing to transfer us. So we were in Italy at this time. So we went in front of a transfer board and took about, maybe 2 months to get all the paperwork done and physical and make sure we were who we were. And then I transferred into our Air Force. And General Doolittle was in command at that time. He was a lieutenant general. And I was assigned to headquarters to wait for an assignment to B-17s because I'd been classified as a bomber pilot. My old commanding officer, who was a group captain, which is like a full colonel, was now on General Doolittle's staff. And when he saw me in American uniform, he asked me what I was going to do. And I said, "Well, I'm going to fly on B-17s now." He said, "Do you really want to do that? Because that was a bad time to go on B-17s. They were losing them like crazy at that time. In fact, there was one raid about that time called the Swineford Raid where they lost 60 airplanes on one raid. So I thought, I didn't really want to do that. But he said, "Well, what would you like to do?" I said, "I'd like to go on night fighters. I'd like to be a shooter than a shootee." And so he said, "Well, I'll talk to the general." So he did, and two or three days later, my orders were changed. I went to night fighters. So it came to me at that time, and it has since, that it's knowing the right people at the right time makes a big difference in your life.
Yeah. So I've been kind of secretly informed that you are a member of a quiet elite group called the Quiet Birdmen.
Oh, that's right. Okay. QBs?
QBs.
Yeah.
Tell me about who that group is.
And well, and it's a secret organization.
Very secret, if they've let me know that.
It's a men-only deal. It's made up of pilots that are a lot of military, but a lot of commercial airline pilots. And it was started after World War I by pilots that were in the Lafayette Escadrille. That's the French deal. And they started in New York at a tavern there with just a small group. And now it's spread all over the United States. They call them hangers. I belong to the one here in Olympia, although I joined in Wichita. And it's a great group of guys, and we just have a good time, try to do a good scene, don't have any real good cause.
But it's you guys have got a unique bond.
Yeah.
And so that's very important.
Yeah.
One last question for you. I also hear there might be a D.B. Cooper story in your history, or...
But say that again.
D.B. Cooper story?
Oh, yeah. Well, I was somewhat involved on the fringe of the D.B. Cooper story. After I left the Air Force, I went to work for Boeing as a test pilot. And I was the chief of test pilot at that time. And I had a phone call. I was in my office at about 5 o'clock. Most everybody had gone home, and the phone rang. I answered, and he said, "This is the FBI calling from Boeing Field." He said, "We've got a guy out here who's going to jump out of a 727, and we need to get some information on speeds." I said, "Well, I'll try to help you. What do you need to know?" He said, "Well, he wants to go out the back door of the 270. We want to know what kind of speed he should get down to get that door open." So I said, "Well, just off the top of my head, I'd say about 140 knots, so your door will open and he can get out." And that was my part, small part.
Right. Well, Al, I want to thank you very much for your time today. It's a pleasure getting a chance to meet you, being here at Patriots Landing, and meeting some of the unique and absolutely wonderful people here, and a chance to hear your stories and a chance to carry them on, and so that my generation as well as my kids can learn what it is that the sacrifices that you made so that we can have the life that we have today. And I appreciate that.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here. This is a great place.
Okay. Thank you, Al.
Okay.
This has been a special Honoring Veterans presentation of Answers for Elders, brought to you by Carriage. For more information about Carriage, the website is careage.com.